late 60s, early 70s. And so neat how, many heard that song? How many did not realize that song was out of Ecclesiastes? How many never heard that song before? Anybody? A couple of you. Yeah, listen, I don't believe you. You're lying to me. Well, let's look at Ecclesiastes is a diary. And it's a diary of the wisest man that ever lived. And we're going to get to peek into his private thoughts. It's a diary of a search for fulfillment and happiness. And it's King Solomon's diary. And in chapter 1, Solomon describes his search for fulfillment and under the sun and by education and great study. And in chapter 2, he searches out pleasure and hard work and great accomplishment. And then in chapter 3, he contemplates how time passes. In chapter 4, he's devoted to achievement and advancement. 5 and 6, he falls into utter frustration with the great wealth he's amassed and all the wealth and the fortune of those around him. And the next two chapters contain warnings. This is the reflections of a man who's seen people fall right and left around him. And in chapter 9, Solomon seems to hit rock bottom. And he focuses in on the inescapable fact of death. But toward the end of the chapter, he focuses attention once again to giving wisdom on anybody who would listen. And in chapter 12 is the result of his search. It details the conclusions of the wisest of the wise. He won't be fooled any longer about what brings happiness. And Solomon did not conclude that vanity, vanity, all is vanity. That's what most people think his conclusion is, that meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. That isn't his conclusion. If that were his conclusion, this would be a depressing book. But it's not. This is my favorite book in the Old Testament. We'll talk about that as we go. But here's the outline of the book. The first chapter. The purpose of this book is to present a wise and philosophical case that life is futile apart from God. And in chapter 1, he says, I wonder what's going to give my life meaning. What's going to make my life worthwhile? And then in chapter 2, through the rest, the end of chapter 1, all the way through almost the end of the book, all the way through chapter 11, he says, everything under the sun is futile. It's meaningless. It's all a soap bubble. And when I say soap bubble, Solomon uses this word. The word for meaningless is a Hebrew word, hevel. And what it means is vapor. And Solomon says, everything under the sun is a vapor. It lasts about that long. It's about that secure. There's nothing under the sun. Everything under the sun is hevel. Just a vapor. It's here for a moment, and then it's gone. Soap bubbles. Everything is soap bubbles. And he says it's all a chasing after the wind. Everything under the sun. And so here's his conclusion. Live over the sun. Don't live for anything under the sun. Live for God. And Solomon has two parts to this. My hand's all soapy now. Two parts to this. I missed something here. Well, it's not on there, is it? He has two conclusions. Enjoy life and fear God. So, the book of Ecclesiastes is in two parts. The first half of it is all about the futility of human effort. And he talks about the futility of seeking pleasure and the futility of wisdom and the futility of work. Because all of our work's got to be left to another people. Because all of our work can't change God's timing. And all of our work may be lost. And so the first chapter, and you see this phrase over and over again in chapters 1 through 6. Meaningless, chasing after the wind. But the second half of the book is really more, instead of about human effort, it's all about the inability of human understanding. The inability of wisdom. We can't. What's good or bad for us, we can't determine that. We can't know. Knowing righteousness doesn't equal living rightly, does it? Knowing what's right doesn't equal living what's right. And because justice can't be predicted, it can't be carried out. And the ability of insight, we can't know when we're going to die. We can't know if our wisdom is going to be of value or not. We can't even know if our work is going to pay off or not. And so this phrase in the second half of the book, over and over again, man cannot discover anything about his life. Are you depressed yet? Well, there's 8 soap bubbles he goes into. The first soap bubble, let's see. Oh, you know what? The bubbles don't show up. That would be a beautiful drawing of a soap bubble there. Is pleasure. And he says, pleasure is meaningless. It's a chasing after the wind. It's a soap bubble. Laughter. What good does laughter do? You could be laughing 1 minute and sad the next. What have you accomplished when you laugh? Solomon had this ability to plunge into drunkenness and foolishness and yet have a part of him that still stands back and observes with wisdom and clarity. Can I suggest something? You don't have that ability. And I don't have that ability. We can't plunge into drunkenness and debauchery and have it not affect us. God gave Solomon that ability. We don't have it. Now, there's an argument that goes like this. In order to make good choices about anything, you have to experience it. I don't really have the right to judge anything until I've experienced it. I can't form an opinion about something unless I've been there. And there's the argument. You don't know me. Unless you've walked a mile in my shoes, you can't judge what I'm doing. You can't form an idea if it's good or not. You can't make judgments if you haven't tried it. Don't knock it till you've tried it. That's the argument. You can't make a clear judgment about drugs unless you've tried them. You can't have a clear perspective on divorce unless you yourself have been divorced. You don't know what it's like, so you can't speak about anything you personally haven't experienced. Can I just tell you that that's a line of baloney? In fact, sometimes the reality is when you experience it, it reduces your ability to evaluate it clearly. As in, we don't become drug addicts to figure out if being a drug addict is a good plan or not. Right? Being high on LSD actually impairs your ability to judge whether or not LSD is a good thing. The addict can't choose wisely because he's hooked. And he's lost his ability. He's enslaved. Do you have to try suicide to know whether or not suicide's a good thing? I'm thinking that if you try suicide, you can't evaluate it anymore. And over the years, there's been all kinds of cases like this where your actual experience makes it harder to judge. And it takes away from your wisdom instead of adding to it. There's some sins and there's some behaviors that we can observe from a distance and we can say, I don't need to try that to know that that's bad. There's a parking lot out here. I have not eaten one thing I've picked up off that parking lot. And you know what? I am 100% confident that I can say that there's nothing on that parking lot that I want to eat. That's not where I'm going to go to get good food. I can tell you that by going to that parking lot, there is nothing that's going to nourish me there. And I've never experienced it. In the same way in life, I can tell you that there's some things I know there's nothing good that's going to come out of that. There's nothing that's going to nurture my soul or my spirit, and I'm not going to participate in that. And Solomon tried pleasure for us. He denied himself no pleasure. And he said, I came to this conclusion. It was no good. There was nothing in that pleasure. Nothing came out of it. And so from there he tried, since nothing was accomplished, let's try work. Let's accomplish a lot. And in chapter 2 here, he's going to use the word I 18 times in 9 verses. I thought, I will, I said, I tried, I wanted, I undertook, I built, I made, I bought, I also owned, I amassed, I acquired, I became, I denied myself nothing, I refused my heart no pleasure, I surveyed, I toiled. 18 times in 9 verses he uses the word I. And he said it was a soap bubble. Because no matter what I amassed, no matter what I accomplish, I'm going to die. We work hard, don't we? We work hard our whole life. And when you die, there's not one thing that you've earned or worked for that you can, even the smallest thing that you could put in the palm of your hand that you get to take with you when you die. Not the least little grain of sand that you could hold in your hand do you get to keep when you die. It's all a chasing after the wind. We work so hard to amass it. I remember when my dad had cancer. And he had to move into a hospice home, and my mom couldn't take care of the house, and so we had to help her move into an assisted living community. And they had a house full of stuff that they had spent their lifetime accumulating, stuff that they dearly loved, a grandfather clock, a beautiful piano, an organ, paintings, furniture, jewelry that at one time seemed so important. And now, at the end of my dad's life, it was like, how do I get rid of this? Will anybody buy it? Is it worth anything? When you die, there's only two things that matter. Where you stand with God, and who do you have around you? And that's all you care about. And he masked all this stuff, and he said it was a soap bubble. It was a vapor. It was nothing. And so he says, enjoy life while you can. He said, you know what my reward was for working really hard? Enjoying my work. It gave me something to do. Took my mind off of things. Enjoy your work. Enjoy your... When you go to work, you may not have a great job. You may have a crummy job. Find something to enjoy about it. Enjoy your life. Because it's just a soap bubble. You may not have everything you want. You may not have achieved everything you want. But enjoy it. Enjoy your spouse. They may not be perfect. My wife is as close to perfect as they come. The worst thing she has is bad taste in men. Me. Enjoy your spouse. Have fun with them. Enjoy your life. Because work is a soap bubble. And then he contemplated lifespan. He said, no matter how long you live, when you die, it won't be long before you're forgotten. Nobody remembers who came before. There are still men and women around today who endured the concentration camps of Auschwitz. There are men and women around today who survived the Holocaust. And there are other people around today who deny it ever even happened. No matter how long you live, it's going to be quickly forgotten. No matter what you achieve, no matter what your accomplishments are, it's going to be forgotten. And Solomon says, you know what? Even those that haven't even been born yet will be forgotten by the people that come after them. We work so hard to live a long time, don't we? He says, that's the soap bubble. Money. That's a soap bubble. Fame and reputation. It's a soap bubble. We know the names. You know the names, don't you? Justin Bieber, Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears. They're people who have it all. They have almost unlimited money. They have fame, they have beauty, they have youth, they have health, they have success. And yet every one of them has ended up in rehab or jail. Getting everything you want simply doesn't guarantee happiness or satisfaction. Having it all doesn't make earth the happiest place on earth. Solomon rode every ride. Solomon bought everything he wanted. He denied himself no luxury. He refused himself no little whim. And yet in the end, all of this was just a soap bubble. Pleasures can't lift us out of our earthbound frustrations. And so the next one he tried was good deeds. If happiness and fame, maybe I'll serve other people. I'll do kind things. I'll help other people. And he said that was a soap bubble. He goes, you know what? Nothing that's broken can be fixed. No matter how much good deeds I have, nothing that's crooked can be straightened out. It's a soap bubble. If you're doing good deeds in order to earn favor with God, get off that hamster wheel. We don't do good deeds in order to be acceptable to God. We have already been accepted, and now we do good deeds out of that acceptance. It's not for acceptance, it's from acceptance. And he tried that. He tried drive and ambition. And he said that was another soap bubble, because no matter what you do, no matter how much drive you have, when you die, it's all gone. You can rise to the top, but your fate will be the same as those at the bottom. So enjoy life. Youth. We want to stay young. We spend a lot of money and a lot of effort to stay young. We change our diets to stay young. We buy all kinds of creams and lotions to stay young. We dye our hair to stay young. We do surgery to remove wrinkles. We want to stay young. We exercise because we want to stay healthy and young. And Solomon says at the end of the day, it's all a soap bubble. Youth is fleeting, is it not? It goes by so fast. I look in the mirror sometimes and there's a stranger looking back at me. Here, I still want to do all the things that I wanted to do in my 20s. My body has betrayed me. It will not do them anymore. I remember when I was in college staying up all night because I didn't get my paper written. And I would stay up all night and I'd have a 2 liter of Dr. Pepper, 2 cans of bean dips, and a bag of Fritos. And in the morning, I would still be awake. All that food would be gone and I'd have a paper written. And then I would go to class. And I'd be tired, but it wasn't that bad. If I ate like that and stayed up all night, they would have to hospitalize me now. But I still want to do it. I still want to do all that stuff. But youth is fleeting. You know, when you're young, you guys tend to say, when my life starts, I'll be happy. When I finally get out of high school, my life will start. But then what happens is, when I get out of college, then real life begins. But then you get out of college and you go, when I get married, life will have actually begun. Then I'll start my family. You get married and you go, when we have kids, then I'll really be happy. I'll be complete then because I'll have kids. And then you go, but you know what? I have kids. If I just owned my own home, then I'd be content. And then if I didn't have to live so close to the bone, if I was making a little more money, if I got that raise and that promotion, then I'd be okay. That's when things will really start. And then it's, when you get that raise, then when I get that boat, when I get that motorcycle, when I get that new car, when I get that RV, when I get that, then I'll finally have arrived. My life will begin. And the next thing you know, you're saying, when those kids that you wanted are out of the house, then life will begin. And when I retire, then I'll be happy. And there are people who reach the end of their life and they're still waiting for life to begin. You can't live your life waiting for the next thing before life starts. This is it. You're living it. You're in the middle of it. Enjoy life where you're at. Enjoy life. Solomon had tried it all, did it all, had it all, achieved it all. And here's what he concluded. Nothing's ever going to be enough. The cravings for more will never go away. And so he came to 2 keys. And these are Solomon's 2 keys. The first one is this. Enjoy life. Enjoy it. He says, this phrase is repeated 8 times in Ecclesiastes. The reason is, life is short. It's a soap bubble. It's brief. It's a vapor. And then it's gone. And every second is a gift from God. Now look, I know not everything's going well in your life. There's bills you can't pay. There's people that you're having conflicts with. There's family disappointments. There's struggles at work. There's health issues. You hurt, you're aching, you're taking pills. I understand this. You can choose to complain, and you can choose to be bitter and disappointed, or you can choose to enjoy life, find something to enjoy. Solomon says that's one of the keys. The other key is this. Fear God. This phrase, fear God, is repeated 5 times in Ecclesiastes. And the reason is, judgment's coming. Now look, our judgment for sin, it's passed over. But we will give an account, won't we? And whether or not we built with wood, hay, or stubble, or gold, silver, precious stones. We're not judged on our sin. That's been dealt with once for all on the cross. But we are dealt with. God asks us to use our time wisely and invest our time wisely. So fear God, because we will be called to account. Here's what I love about Ecclesiastes. This is the thing. Ecclesiastes centers me. Here's what I mean. His two conclusions, enjoy life and fear God, right there. It's in the middle. If everything is going really well and everything is going great and you're captivated by this idea of more money, more success, you see your future looks bright and you're going to have it all. You're going to have those boats and those motorhomes and RVs. You are making it. Things are going well. And you're just captivated by everything this world has to offer. You read Ecclesiastes, and Ecclesiastes' message is fear God because judgment's coming and it brings you back down a little bit. But if life's going lousy and you've had disappointments and you've had frustrations and you've had struggles and you've had fears and you've had sickness and you're hurting and you're disappointed, you read Ecclesiastes and it lifts you up because it says enjoy life. Every second is a gift from God. Enjoy this moment right now. And it brings you back to center. Sometimes we as Christians, we run ahead of God. And so we get off to one side or the other. And the two sides we get off are self-denial, asceticism. We deny, you know, I gotta make sure I'm living very humbly and poor. You know, churches, you just got a new pastor. It's like the joke about the church that says, we just want a poor and humble pastor. And God, if you'll keep him humble, we'll keep him poor. I can tell that joke because, you know, I'm not running for anything here. But we get to thinking that something spiritual about denying ourselves pleasure. I can't take that day off. I got to give up everything. I got to self-sacrifice everything. I got to deny myself. Something about foolishness and pleasure's foolishness. No. Solomon says, enjoy life. If you're running around in this garb of depression and this hair shirt to punish yourself, and you're whipping yourself with guilt and shame, and I got to do more, I got to be more, I got to try harder, I got to rededicate, I got to give up and give up and give up, and you're into this mode of self-denial, Solomon says to you, enjoy life. Every second is a gift from God. And if you get off on the other side of this thing, and you're into self-indulgence, and you're using your freedom in Christ as an excuse to sin. You're saying, I have liberty in Christ. I can do anything. There is no law anymore. We're under grace. Then Solomon says, bring it back. Fear God, because judgment's coming. And the book of Ecclesiastes, more than any other book, helps you to avoid life's extremes. If you can hold on to those two things, enjoy life and fear God, things will go well with you. I don't know if you've been reading the other books as I've preached on them. Please read this one. I sat down and read this one several times this week in one sitting each time. And I come away different. If the weight of this world is weighing down on me, it lifts me up because I'm to enjoy life. And that's a command from God. And if I'm starting to drift and get my eyes off Jesus, it brings me back. Fear God, because that's the living over the sun. That's the thing. And so there's the book of Ecclesiastes, my favorite book in the Old Testament. If this book depresses you, then you're not understanding it right. It's there to bring you back to center. It's there to help you avoid all those extremes. God wants you to enjoy your life. Circumstances will never be perfect. If you're waiting for circumstances to be perfect, you'll reach the end of your life and never having lived it. But as you live your life, remember, one day we will give an account. And so fear God. Don't use your liberty in Christ as an excuse to sin. Pray with me.